Well, the scoreboard said I lost today, but what the scoreboard doesn't say is what it is I have found.
Hello and welcome back to the Tennis Connected Studios for May 5th, 2017. I'm Nima Naderi alongside Parsa Sami, and we're here this week to preview the Madrid Masters from Spain. This week's podcast is brought to you by Top Notch Tennis Tours. Make sure to hit them up for any packages or tickets that are needed for the Madrid Masters as well as the Roma Masters the week after. Before we begin this week's show, let's introduce our co-host Parsa. How are you this week, my friend?
Doing great. How are you?
Doing really good. I mean, the weather in Toronto is very subpar, but I'm just looking forward to hopefully, some sunshine in Madrid that will, lift our spirits and keep us going there. So we'll see how that unfolds. So Parsa, we're into the, the fourth Masters 1000 of the year for the men, as well as on the women's side for the premier level. They're back together now in a dual situation, which is nice, with Monte Carlo just featuring the men. We had some Stuttgart action last week, which was a pretty big tournament on the women's side. But I think this is, really going to kickstart the clay season with Madrid this week, and then Rome, and then culminating with the French Open at the end of the month. So we have a lot of storylines to cover here, Parsa. In addition to the actual draw analysis, we had Novak Djokovic coming out with news today that he's just completely, gutted his whole coaching team of physios and, coach Marian Vlada and everybody in his team, which was shocking to me, to be honest with you, because he's struggling as it is, right? And then, he had that fallout with Boris Becker at the end of last year. And, has injuries, elbow, all of these other things. And now he just gets rid of his, his coach. How long has he been with Marian Vlada for, man? 15 years? So to me, it's super shocking. Comes in now with no coach. He said he's not in any hurry to get one. So that tells me that he's going to be playing, Madrid, where he's defending champion, Roma Masters, where he's defending finalist, and Roland Garros, where he won the event last year to complete his Grand Slam collection, without a coach. So he's probably going to have, obviously, a physio, somebody to stretch him out on a part-time basis. But where's that voice coming from? Where is he going to be bouncing off of ideas? Is it his brother Marco? Is it his dad? Like, who, what I'm saying? Where's that outlet? Because he seems to me like he's a guy who needs to gain energy from his box. He's always, when things are not going well, he's, screaming at his box, or he's going to rip his shirt, or he's going to, tell him to get up, and he needs energy. That's where he always gravitates towards, and that's not there really anymore, right? Like, it's going to be there. His wife will be there, his brother and his parents, but who else is going to be there that is actually, at that level of a coach? So I have no idea.
That's the stage of his life, right?
Exactly, and he's going to be 30, I think, coming up, right? In a few days, he's going to be 30 years old. So it's, everything is, he's in that, maybe not the last chapter, but definitely, towards the end of his career, relatively. Let's say he's got 5 years to go. It's not like he's 20 anymore. He's 30 now. So he's got, let's give him 5 more years. How do you assess all of this? Like, we don't really know what the reasons were. We can kind of figure it out. But, what's your take on this whole thing? Because it's very interesting to me.
Yeah, I think also that in the later part of a career, you're seeing that every athlete, every tennis player anyway, sort of goes through a renaissance to finish the career. So as you said, I don't think it's the end of his career, but I do think it's the final third of his career.
Yes.
So meaning that two thirds have been complete, and now he's got the last section of his career, solid 5, 6, 7 years left, where he has to sort of redevelop his game as he ages, and he has to find exactly kind of what he said, Nima, I agree with him, is find that spark again. I'm not sure that he's been competing with that spark all the time in every single matchup, and he's sort of just not all put together at the moment. But I think, it's a little bit scary, but I think that's what he needs. So he's not far off from what he thinks he needs and what I think he needs. I think mm-hmm. they're the same, one and the same. And I'm not sure how it's going to work out, who he's going to choose, but he's going to have to be very, very careful. And we'll see what happens. It's definitely something that's going to be talked about. And hopefully he has someone in place by the American swing in the summer, because, you know, or by Wimbledon at least, because it's going to be just a lot of talking, a lot of just back and forth rumors and all this kind of stuff. And I think he wants peace, and we'll see where he ends up. But as far as this preparation, I mean, Nima, the one thing we know for sure is that Djokovic knows how to play tennis.
Of course, yeah.
He's a great player and a great champion. Yes. So he's going to have a lot, and maybe just not having anyone in the box is going to make him more reliant on himself and give him at least a temporary boost in play. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a great result this week.
Yeah, and you know, and I tweeted that today, Par, so that, you know, my first impressions after I heard the news, it was maybe 7, 8 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, was that, you know, Djokovic is such a good player that even if he shows up with no coach and one racket in his bag, he's still a threat to win any tournament that he enters. I mean, this guy's won everything. He knows exactly what he's doing. But I will say is, you know, for him to, you know, claim that he has to find that spark and that, you know, ignite his career once again, this basically, this downfall all started to occur after, you know, the French Open last year, where he won the French Open and he finished his Grand Slam collection. He's at 12 now, six away from Federer and a couple away from Nadal and Sampras. So the thing for me is that with him saying that, maybe his goal was never to get to 18 or to 16, or, you know, do you know what I'm saying? Maybe his goal was like to just win all four Grand Slams, and now he has that. He did that at the age of 29. And maybe then he woke up the next morning and he's like, I'm good. You know what I mean? Like, this is what I wanted. And obviously he was trying.
How can you set your goal at 16 or 18 Grand Slams? It's a little bit ludicrous, no?
I don't know, but perhaps. But what I'm saying is that there's always that next thing. Like, why is Federer still playing? Well, we know he loves the game because he's going to be 36 in August, and the guy's still out there and playing, and, you know, he's being smarter. But he's 17-1 for this year. He's won a lot, some amazing tournaments. You know, you see Nadal still trying to do it. He's on a roll right now. Let's see what he does this week. We'll get into that shortly. Murray, he's obviously finding that it's very hard to become number one close to age 30, and he's figuring out that this year with, you know, his poor results, let's be honest. But for Djokovic, like I said, I mean, for him to be in such a dominant position, I mean, he was just rolling. And then he comes in, you know, Wimbledon, that letdown, loses to Querrey, shows up to Toronto with a very, you know, watered down field. He wins that. And then from there, he relatively struggles for him. I mean, he lost to Del Potro. That was probably what he really wanted. He wanted that Olympic gold medal where he was the favorite for sure. That didn't happen. Del Potro beat him in that great match. Made the U.S. Open finals with a bunch of withdrawals and retirements along the way. And then Wawrinka beat him there. Didn't really do much for the rest of the year. And then coming into this season, as we know, he hasn't really performed except for winning Doha to start off the season. So it's a lot of question marks. I think this week we're going to find out even more. But like I said, you never know. I mean, he might lose first round this week, but come back and win Rome next week because he's that good of a player. And he's proven that. He's won all of these tournaments numerous times. So you never know. And he's, like I said, he's still only 29, 30 years old. So by no means is he old. And I think it's definitely just a mental thing. I mean, what's your final analysis on that, on Djokovic?
Yeah, it is a mental thing, and that's exactly what I think it is, and I think it's something that he has to figure out on his own, and I think that's why, you know, just saying those words, he is taking the steps necessary in order to sort of start from scratch again and find his way. You know, what's the right word, Nima? It's a re-engineering of who he is as an athlete and as a tennis player, and that's what's happening right now, and we're going to get to watch it.
Yeah, I mean, and let's, you know, we wish him all the best, and hopefully he comes flying out here, and we'll get into his draw in a second as we start with the men. But I wanted to obviously discuss a topic that was really hot last week, which was Maria Sharapova's return, losing in the semifinals of Stuttgart. And then, you know, Jeannie Bouchard has some very choice words asking about, you know, in Turkey where she lost in the first round once again. You know, how do you feel about Sharapova coming back? And she's like, she's a cheater. She should never be allowed to play again. All this ludicrous talk from the Canadian. And lo and behold, you know, the tennis gods have placed them right beside each other in the draw. They're not playing in the first round, but there's the potential of the second round. Problem is that, you know, Elisa Cornet and Lucic Brony are going to have something to say for that, with Lucic Brony being Sharapova's opponent and Cornet being Bouchard's. I don't think, I mean, I would love to see the second round match, even though we can't watch it because the WTA still hasn't figured out their streaming. But with that said, I don't think that Bouchard gets by Cornet just because she hasn't won anything and she's losing first, second round of ITF events. So, I mean, she's completely, you know, lost the plot. And Sharapova's hungrier than ever, playing really well. And that's going to be a tough match against Lucic Brony. But I think you have to give the slight edge to Sharapova, just in terms of the, you know, the intimidation factor. I think, you know, she's going to come in there and you know, fight for everything. And she learned a few things from her loss in Stuttgart to Kiki. And I think it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a good one here. And we'll see how it transpires. You have any overall, you know, thoughts on that before we jump into the men's draw?
I mean, you know, everyone needs to get over Sharapova. She served her time. She admitted her guilt. And the Court of Arbitration for Sport, which is independent, released a beautiful, you know, judgment on her case, and they exonerated her basically of knowingly ingesting it, but also faulted her for not taking responsibility over what she's ingesting. So, you know, I think all of it is fair and is done, and the penalty has been served, although I felt like it was a bit excessive. And now this extra stuff is some of the stuff that you sort of come to expect, but, you know, it's sort of the ugly truth among athletes is that, you know, we all think that someone's doing something in order to gain that competitive edge, and lo and behold, someone was, and she was caught. And so therefore, from an athlete's perspective, you know, you're looking at that person as a cheat, but, you know, it's all there. It's all, the testing is there for this exact reason. She was caught. She didn't get to advance, and, you know, now she pays the price and she has to build her ranking back up.
Yeah, and I think there's two things here to finish off. First of all, Bouchard is looking to stay relevant because she knows that she's losing her limelight, you know, week by week as she continues to lose, unless she starts to win, which we obviously hope that she does because she's good for the game. And then the second component to that is that, for me, look, you know what? Everybody is going to do whatever they can to gain that competitive advantage within the rules. And Sharapova did that. Yes, was it helping her? It was. You know, the substance that she was taking, but at that time it was okay. You know what I mean? It's like these players, you see them, and it drives me crazy, Parsa. You know, they do it on the ATP all the time right now. Somebody loses the first set, they take a 10-minute bathroom break. Obviously, the umpires are letting them do that. It's ludicrous, right? Like, what are you doing? You know what I'm saying? You're just doing that so you can stop the rhythm of your opponent because you lost the first set. And guys take injury timeouts. They do that both on the men's and women's side out of nowhere. And, you know, there's a cramp, and then all of a sudden they're running, you know, for 10 minutes. So there's a lot of stuff coming. You know, it's not drug abuse, but there's a lot of, you know, manipulation of the rules. And as long as you can get away with it in such a competitive, stressful environment, I think people are going to do it. And Sharapova did that until it was, you know, all of a sudden banned, and she paid the price, and now she's back. And my only position was that she shouldn't have played Stuttgart because she was banned until half of the tournament had already started. But as it goes from this week on, I mean, it's completely fair game. She can get wild cards, as far as I'm concerned, for the rest of the year if she needs it, for every single week. That's basically my analysis on that. And as now we move into the men's draw, Parsa, Andy Murray, another guy who is just, you know, is a head scratcher right now. He took that wild card into Barca, lost to team. Team played a great match. They could potentially face off again in the quarterfinals. You know, what's your thoughts on Murray right now, Parsa? Is what we're seeing from him, is it still, you know, because we're into May now. We're into the fifth month of 2017. You know, he had December off, obviously, which is, I know tennis's off season's a joke, and he had that month off after he grinded to win five tournaments to end the year and capture the world number one ranking. But is he still recovering from that?
I have to say, absolutely, he's still recovering from that. That's not something easy to recover from. It was a tremendous amount of tennis, a tremendous amount of high-level tennis, and a colossal effort physically and mentally in order to gain and attain that number one ranking, which he so deserves. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you're seeing proof that someone cannot maintain that level for that amount of time. And so whether it be a physical injury or a mental fatigue, you're seeing that. But I think as time goes on, as we roll back into the Grand Slam season with Roland Garros and Wimbledon, I think you're going to see Murray right there playing in form again. He's had good amount of breaks now, and it's something that he still has points to be gained, and he doesn't really have to defend all that much until the fall. So, he has a lot to defend, to be honest with you. I don't know why I said that like that, but for his level of a player, mm-hmm. maybe not as much to defend until the fall.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, he made the finals of Madrid last year. He won Rome, finals of Roland Garros. He won Wimbledon. Didn't do much in the summer because of the Olympics. Lost, I believe, quarters of U.S. Open. And then after that, didn't lose a match for the rest of the year. So, yeah, I mean, for the next four tournaments, he's got a ton of... And he won Queen's Club. So he's got he's got a lot on his plate in the next month and a half or so. He loves the grass, so I suspect that he's going to do some damage there. But, what is he going to lose on the clay? And then what can potentially Nadal gain on the clay? We'll get to him in a moment, Parsa, but let's break down, Murray's section here. He starts off against Garcia Lopez or Kupol. Misha Zverev is there, who is not... Worst surface is clay. He's probably going to lose to Gasquet first round. Lucas Pouille has been playing some great tennis. Semis of Monte Carlo, won in Budapest. So he's coming in hot. He's going to be feeling good. Potentially maybe, the second informed player in this section, I would say maybe after Thiem. Maybe even the first, arguably. We also have Cole Schreiber, who can play on this stuff. Dimitrov, who's lost four matches in a row now after... inexplicitly, I don't know what, like, this guy is just so up and down. He started played terrible last year, picked it up a little bit, had that fallout at the US Open that we discussed that we were very disappointed in, came back hot this year, semis of Australia, then did nothing, Miami, Indian Wells, Monte Carlo. I mean, losing first round every tournament, right? So we'll see what he comes up with. But for me, when I'm looking at this quarter, I'm going to go with Dominic Thiem to get past Murray if they do meet and reach the semifinals. What's your call?
I still think that team isn't at that level yet. Okay. I think it's a great pick. But for me, Murray being the defending finalist, I still think he's going to be able to handle the situation in terms of the atmosphere and how things affect that. With the big backswings that team has, I think that the faster surface is going to be a little bit to his detriment, although his serve and his forehand will be massive on the surface.
Yes.
I still think that Murray will have the intangibles that will get him through that match. So I'm going to have Murray in that semi.
Okay. Moving on to quarter number two, it's led by Stan Wawrinka, who's a former finalist here as well. Other notable players are Jack Sock, who has been, putting together a very good year, and he's also been putting together, a very smart calendar in terms of he's not overplaying at all. He's playing like he's a top five player, which I kind of like and I kind of don't like. You know what I'm saying? I like it because, he's being smart and he's not overplaying like a guy like Thiem, but you're still not a top 10 player even, right? So you might maybe enter Barcelona as well. You know what I mean? Try to gain a little bit more footing so you can really push to a nice French Open result. So we'll see how that transpires from here. I mean, his ball is going to jump on any surface, maybe not on grass as much, but everything else is going to be very violent topspin coming off of his racket. We have Thomas Burdick, who, again, if he made the quarters here, nobody would be surprised. We have Alex Zverev, who is still active in the Munich tournament. He got by Struff today in a third set breaker in his on home soil. We have Verdasco. Parsa, Verdasco could do something here, man, because he loves this tournament. He always plays well in Madrid. He could be good for, especially if Zverev wins Munich, to come in and play Verdasco first round. Sorry, if Zverev wins Munich, pardon me, and then he has to play Verdasco first round to play Cilic second round, that's going to be a tough draw. So maybe then, you know, I don't see Zverev coming through. If he loses in the semis tomorrow, then maybe he's got a chance to do some damage. But otherwise, I'm going to have to go with Stan the Man to get through to the final four here. What do you have?
I mean, it's hard to argue with Stan the Man. Yes. I totally agree with you with Sock. I do agree with you with Sock and how he is taking a smaller schedule and playing it a little bit wiser. We'll see if he hits hard in the summer hard court season, generally where a lot of the Americans build up their points. In terms of Verdasco, Zverev, Verdasco does play very, very well. Zverev, that's a tough draw. So he better try to win Munich, because I'm not sure he's going to get through that first round, especially without the adequate practice time to get used to the environment. So,
and it's a first round match. There's no bye, right?
So he's going to. It's a first round match, so it's definitely not going to be a straightforward affair there for him. So who knows what's going to happen there? But in terms of form, I mean, you look at a guy like Wawrinka, and you can't say that he's not going to be able to do it. But I'm going to go with a little bit of wild card here. I'm going to say that Wawrinka doesn't necessarily have the goods here, and I think Sock is going to be going through the semis here.
Yeah, and I would like to see it, because I've actually predicted in my projected 2017 rankings for the end of the year that Sock would end as a top 10 player. So I definitely think that he can do it. He's got a massive game. It's really all in his head. He's been managing his backhand better. And, you know, as our buddy Rob Koning says, it's about managing your weaknesses. And you got to be able to do that. And he's starting to do that really well. And if he can just put the antics aside a little bit, just get down to business, put on that hard hat, I think he can definitely have a fantastic season, continue to have one at any rate. So moving on to quarter number three, it's led by Rafa Nadal. You know, Parsa, interesting stat here. I think since 2009, when they moved this to clay in Madrid, Nadal has never won a Monte Carlo, Barcelona, and Madrid in the same season. So based on history, he's not going to win this week. That's based on history. Now, based on the current form of the other guys around him, like the top caliber guys, you know, it bodes well for him, especially because he's coming in off of two straight titles. And he's had a great year, especially he had a very nice hard court season, just lost out to Fed a few times. But Nadal, for me, I mean, Fognini, that's a guy who, you know, has given him a lot of trouble in the past. He took him out in the semis of Miami, but that was on a hard court. Clay, I think, is more Fognini surface, so watch out for some fireworks there. We have Kyrgios back in action in his first actual tour match since he lost to Federer in that epic in Miami. I know he played some DC, but this is his actual first tour match. You know, we wish him well with his grandfather passing away last week. Shout out to Del Potro too, who's actually he withdrew from Estoril this week and is out of Madrid as well, because his grandfather coincidentally also passed away. So we wish Delpo well. So Kyrgios could be a third round opponent for Nadal. That would be a great match too. I think they played maybe in Rome last year, and Nadal won, I think, maybe 6-2, 6-3. So you would definitely have to give the edge to Rafa on this surface. Raonic, another big name here, and Goffin. Raonic still alive, Parsa, in Istanbul. He plays in the semis tomorrow. And then we have Goffin, who's just put together a very classy year. Very deep results consistently. He plays Khachanov, who's just a monster Russian. I mean, this guy is just built to be an athlete, and just watch out for him in the future. But with, you know, when the chips fall, I'm still going to go with Nadal to make the semifinals here. What do you have?
Or when the dust settles, right?
When the dust settles.
The chaos is ensued and the dust settles there. Come on, Nima, can you pick against Nadal right now?
Yeah, it would be stupid. I mean, let's be honest.
When you watched that match, I don't know if you watched Barcelona, but I watched final. And
yeah.
I watched team absolutely just blast the ball, and Nadal runs all the way into the deuce corner doubles alley and just delicately plays an inside out ball from team's hardest shot. Like, how are you supposed to beat this guy on this surface in best of five? I mean, is there anyone that else that's going to win Roland Garros? It's impossible. So, you know, even at, in Madrid, where Madrid's historically obviously very fast, I just, you know, you're going to have to be one of the best players in the world. Maybe you'll get him at Madrid, but then you're not going to get him anywhere that's sea level. So it's not going to happen. So I think Nadal will go through. But I'm not sure if he's going to win the tournament. What do you think? Let's go on, right?
Yeah, let's go on, my friend. So, yeah, I got Rafa in the semis. Now moving on to quarter four, which is obviously led by Djokovic, who we've talked in length about this week. He faces, you know, a couple veteran dirtballers, a couple former top 10 players in Nicolas Almagro and Tommy Robredo. Obviously, both wild cards, both past their prime. Still loving the action out there. Almagro's a little bit older. Robredo, I believe, just celebrated his 35th birthday in Estoril over the week. So happy belated to Tommy. But yeah, I mean, this is the draw is not too bad. I mean, let's be honest about it. I mean, look, he faces Robredo or Almagro. I think Robredo would actually be a tougher match because Almagro hits the ball much bigger, but he can also make a lot more errors. Robredo is just one of those like backboard guys. He's going to put in thousands of balls, and if you know Djokovic is going to have to overpower him and beat him. Then from there, you have Simon or Mafi, who also face off in the first round, potential third round opponents for Joker. And I mean, listen, Mafi's coming back. He lost first round in Munich, and then you have Simon, who's not really a clay courter, but still can play on the surface. We have Nishikori coming back from injury. I'm not really sure what to think about K at this point. And then we have Tsonga, who can play on the surface, as he's shown now in the last two or three years. Kind of like a Sharapova, where he was terrible on this to begin his career. And now throughout the last 5 or 6 years, he's really put together some fine, you know, clay court results. We can't forget about David Ferrer. He's in this field, and he's still alive in Estoril as well. He beat Harrison today 4-0 to make the semis, but I mean, Ferrer right now is not really playing at the level that he needs to, but he might get on a little bit of a run. This is a tough one for me, Parsa. I mean, I want to go with Djokovic to make the semifinals, but who knows? Who knows what's going on? As we know, I mean, it's just chaotic for him right now, and maybe it's not. But by the same token, but I'm still going to go with Djokovic to make the semifinals here. What do you have?
Well, you brought up a good point. Think it's chaotic for Djokovic, and I'll go all the way back to the Federer Djokovic U.S. Open matches, and It's just utter chaos, and the entire crowd is like for Federer and against Djokovic, and this guy's down match points, and in those exact moments he comes up with his best stuff and just hits massive shots and upends the great champion in Federer.
Yes,
in classic type matches, and I think in his situation right now in his professional life, he's in that exact situation. You know, there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of chaos, and he's searching for that guiding light, that peace. And I think that peace is on the tennis court for him. And I think he's going to get exactly what he's looking for. And I'm going to have Djokovic going through.
Okay, so now we have our semifinal set for me. I have Thiem versus Wawrinka, you know, two very similar players. And I'm going to have actually Wawrinka come through there. I'm going to have Djokovic, if he can get to the semis, taking out Nadal to reach the finals. And it's going to be good friends, Wawrinka and Djokovic. But then I'm going to have Stan winning this title. What do you have?
I have Murray and Sock in the top, and I'm going to have Murray going through into the final. And I've got Nadal Djokovic, and I'm going to have, exactly as I stated earlier, finally Nadal will lose one on the dirt. It's going to be this one to Djokovic, and I think it's going to be a Djokovic-Murray final, and I'm going to go with Djokovic holding the title, just so that you and I next week can sit here and talk about how we're so shocked that without anybody in his corner and without all the support staff, Nole was able to rise to the occasion. I think he's setting himself up for that, and I think that's what he wants to see. I think that's what all his fans want to see. And
yes,
hey, you know what? I want to see it too, Nima.
And you know what? That's also going to start, Parsa, is a trend of getting rid of all the super coaches little by little. So you're going to see everybody being coachless now. Well, this guy's winning titles without a coach. You know, everybody gets Becker and Edberg, and everybody gets on that train, even Nisevic, Chang, all these super coaches. And then they start winning, and then they start losing a bit. And then now they're going to see maybe Djokovic doing really well without anybody, or Kyrgios, and they're like, we'll just go solo. And so we'll see how it
They should
goes.
bring on the local coaches, you know, the
Yeah.
developmental junior coaches. So see how that goes.
There you go. Anything is possible, man. Okay, Parsa, so moving now to the women's field. It's led by struggling number one. Actually, not number one, number one here, but not number one in the world, because Serena still has that, even though she's, she's awaiting her first child and enjoying life and, hopefully getting married soon. And it's amazing that she's still number one, did so well. She was, as we all know, she was pregnant when she won the Australian Open, which was an amazing achievement there. Kerber comes in playing pretty bad tennis. I mean, we can't sugarcoat that for, a player who's, defending a couple Grand Slams from last year. I mean, she's nowhere near that form right now. Clay, arguably her worst surface as well. So confidence doesn't appear to be on the up and up for Angie at this point. Babos is a tough first round opponent for her, and I don't think she can get through that. Other notables, I mean, as we said, Parsa, I would love to see that Sharapova, Bouchard. I might even just fly down to Madrid for that match. You know what I mean? Just to see that one match and come back, just because I can't watch it on TV because the WTA won't let me. Other than that, we have Svitolina, who I really like what I'm seeing from her. She kind of, to me, is the new age Azarenka, a friendly player who's, very explosive, solid off of the ground, has a very decent serve, competitive, and I really see it, a good future for her. I actually have her going through to the semis here, and we have, Kuznetsova also here and Caro Garcia. So within this section, with Sharapova present, with a struggling Bouchard, with a Kerber and Svitolina and some other players that can do something, what's your thoughts here?
I think I'm liking Sharapova here. I think she's only going to get better as tournaments go on. I think she's the hungriest player. I can't say she's the most informed player, but I
Yes.
think hunger is a big factor, and I think there's opportunities galore, as we stated in the previous podcasts. When it comes to the women's side, it's, who knows what's going to happen. And we've been looking for a steady force with Kerber not playing her best, with Serena out. And there's room for a consistent superhero, and I think Sharapova is going to come back with a vengeance. And look out for her, Nima. She's my favorite through this section.
Yeah, and it could very well happen because her exact kind of like a Djokovic, you can never count them out because Djokovic is such a competitor and he's won so much, and then subsequently Maria maybe obviously has not won as much, but she's a heck of a competitor and you can never take that away from her, and she's still relatively young and hungry and she's been training hard, and it could very well all come to fruition here. So we'll see how that transpires. As we move into quarter number two, we have Sibulkova, who shockingly is not, clay is not her best surface. I thought it would be a little bit better for her, but it's not, really what she prefers, I would say. I mean, I think hard courts would be her number one surface. We have, Puig here, reigning Olympic champion, Mladenovic, Kiki, who won, not didn't win in Stuttgart last week, but made the semis, Pavlyuchenkova. And then we have, some Americans like Catherine Bellis, Cece Bellis, who's been playing some good ball as of late. And then we have Madison Keys, who's returning to action. And this kind of a clay court definitely might suit somebody like Keys. But with all of that said, I'm going with Kiki to make the semifinals here. What's your call?
Call. I really, I was looking at Konju as a dangerous threat. So that
Yes.
first round matchup for based on what we're both thinking, I think is going to be intriguing. We'll see what how it all really unfolds. Gosh, I really can't figure it out, but I'm gonna go with Madison Keys. so sort of similar to Sharapova in the top half there, in terms of style. I think that's the style that's to beat. But we'll see. I mean, who knows? She's a first strike player, and I think it's going to be valuable. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah,
I go
and
with Madison Keys.
exactly. And this type of surface, Parsa, definitely rewards somebody who hits big and heavy. And that's exactly what both Keys and Sharapova do. They hit a big flat ball, and I think that that's going to could definitely potentially reward them here. Now moving on to section number three, it's led by Konta, who's been playing some good ball as of late, reigning Miami winner. Suarez Navarro, who's amazing on this stuff. Wozniacki, who's had a pretty good resurgence this year. Stozer, who has actually had a very she's almost done in my opinion. I mean, she's still hanging around, but has done really nothing notable as of late. Roberta Vinci, who's on her last year on tour, she's playing some great ball. And then we have Simona Halep, who has been one of those players, Parsa, where you have to think that she does all the right things. She's got great coach in Darren Cahill, very responsible, very professional, but she hasn't been able to pour in the results that all of her friends and pundits would like to see from her, just based on what she can actually do out there. So I think this might be a good week for her to get through. She has a pretty workable draw, and for that reason, I'm gonna go with Halep to make the semis here. What do you have?
Each section gets harder and harder somehow, right, Nima? I
Yes.
mean, the one thing that I'm gonna steal one from my colleague Adrian, who thinks that look out for Francesca Schiavone. I mean, she is on fire, so
Yes.
who knows how she can do, but maybe this is the one that she's gonna lose. But look out for her, guys, out there in the future there. Who knows how that's gonna work out? For me, I think it's gonna be a little home cooking. Maybe I'm gonna go with who'd you pick in this section, Nima?
I have Halep.
Halep, huh? I guess Skivona is in the final section though.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. We get to her in a second.
So gosh. Nima, who do I go here? I'm gonna go. God, I can't go with it, but I'm gonna go with Konta. I don't think she's gonna get there, everybody. But from a process of elimination on the fly here, I think that Konta's got the variables and the intangibles that could potentially get herself to that position. Although that first round matchup is very tricky right from the start. So who knows? We'll know after the first round if Konta's got what it takes to get to the semis here.
Absolutely. Okay, Parsa, so now we're moving into quarter number four. We have Muguruza playing not her best. I mean, she's been injured as of late, but she's going to be feeling good here with her home crowd behind her. We have Schiavone, who's, I mean, talk about a player who loves tennis. I mean, playing with a back brace, just playing with so much passion, and his last year on tour, getting wild cards, completely deservedly so. I hope she has a great final chapter towards her. I don't know if it's an epic career, but very memorable. You know what I mean? I don't think she's a player that we'll ever forget just because she plays with so much flair and passion and class in the game, and she just loves it. And she will be missed because she's definitely a character, and she brings a lot to the women's tour, in my opinion, when she's going deep and she's able to play and do her thing. Other players are Vesnina, who won Indian Wells, which was a massive tournament for her. Safarova, who had to pull out last week in Prague with a virus. So we wish her well and see how she's going to do this week. A lot up for grabs here. I mean, not a very strong section. And we have Pliskova, who is not a clay court player at all. She could lose in the first round. So, and I would not be surprised to see that. I think there's a major opportunity here in this fourth section. Fourth quarter, especially. For that reason, I mean, I really can't see anybody else except for Muguruza getting through to the semifinals here. Maybe Vesnina, but clay is not really her best surface either. But I'm going to be going with Muguruza to get through. What's your call?
Sounds like a struggle in this bottom half. The other one that stands out to me is Makarova.
Yes.
I think she could potentially put something together here. Just because of the way the matchups work out, I think she can struggle through Kiki Burton's and get through. And then Muguruza, I mean, who knows how healthy she actually is and can advance there. And then now she's won two matches, and she's really, you know, Vesnina did win Indian Wells, but she really hasn't done much since. And so,
yes.
You know, I don't know. This is a tough one. But my initial thought was Muguruza, and so I'm going to stick with that and say that Muguruza will be able to get through that second round match and find her way. But again, the lower half I'm not so certain about, but Muguruza for me.
Okay. So now reviewing our picks here, Parsa, I have Svitolina and Kiki in the top half. In the semifinals, I'm going to be going with Svitolina to make it through. And then I have Halep and Muguruza. I'm going to have Halep getting through there. And then it's going to be Halep and Svitolina. And I'm going to have, tough one for me, I'm going to go with Halep to win this tournament. What's your pick?
That's terrific. So I've got a Sharapova Keys, and I've got a, who do I have, Nima? Muguruza and Konta.
Yes.
Very interesting. I mean, who knows? But I'm going to have Madison Keys going through to the final, and I'm going to have her placing or facing, gosh, I'm going to go with Muguruza, and I'm going to have Muguruza winning the title, which I don't know how I just got there, but I did. Somehow, if she's of health,
mm-hmm.
I think she'll get there.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, she's very good game. I mean, she's good for any surface, really. I mean, it's such a pure, clean ball. I think she's tough to deal with the interactions that I've seen with her coach on court. But, I mean, super talented, very strong player. Another player that's great for the game, very marketable. So, you know, we wish her all the best as she, you know, trucks through this tournament. It's on her home soil. So I'm sure that would make the hometown fans very happy to see that transpire. So, I, you know, Parsa, I think that's going to be it for this week. For everybody out there, make sure to hit us up next Sunday as we return to review the men's and women's champions for Madrid. And, you know, we got no time, no rest for the wicked here. We're going to get right into the Roma draw and, you know, bang that one out and see what happens there. In the meantime, for anybody looking to stay current with what's happening this week in Madrid, make sure to hit up tennisconnected.com for everything that's, you know, necessary for this event. You can also follow Parsa at ParsaSammy on Twitter, myself at Tennis Connected. You can also follow Tennis Connected on Instagram and our Facebook page. I'd like to also mention that we have a new addition to our writing team, which is Steve Tigner, which I'm very happy to announce. Steve, as you all know, is a longtime writer for Tennis.com as well as many other publications, and he's a great writer. And then finally, Parsa, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Thank you, and I'm excited about Tennis Connected's direction, just so everyone hears it.
Thank you very much, my friend. It's been a long road, and we just keep on, you know, got to keep trucking through. And then finally, everybody out there, thanks once again for listening to our show. We always appreciate your feedback and your, you know, your positivity towards what we're doing. And make sure to hit us up next week. And anybody looking to get down to either Madrid, Rome, as well as the ensuing French Open, make sure to hit up top-notch tennis tours as well as Grand Slam tennis tours. Enjoy the tennis from Madrid, and we'll speak with you in about 9 days.